ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what a beatdown! Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass. It's a Taco Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I have no idea how today's show is going to go. I'll tell you, this is the last place I want to be.
I believe it. I was just going to ask how you're doing.
I
felt for you. Obviously, I felt for Kelvin so much, and I wanted it so bad for him, but I wanted it bad for you, too. And I just, having been through similar situations, I was curious how you were going to be today, because that one's
Blanker's already making it about you? I'm kidding.
No, I'm serious when I say I was wondering how you're doing, because I was wondering, did you guys come back after the game last night, or?
I drove to San Antonio, so I woke up early and drove back. Team drove back today.
Okay.
They didn't. They got back a little while ago. They had a nice crowd show up whenever they got off the bus here on campus, and then they had a great crowd at the hotel after the game. So it was good. It was, it was good that they, the support. The support was awesome. They put 40,000 inside the Alamo Dome yesterday. It was like an old family reunion, a who's who of, Cougar brethren. Carl Lewis, Elvin Hayes, Akeem Olajuwon, Dr. Dunk, Mr. Mean. I mean, it was a who's who of Jim Nantz. So it was, it's sad the way that it ended. Still very proud of this Houston Cougar team, though. I mean, they won 35 games. Yeah. They back-to-back Big 12 champions, 19 Big 12 wins. Probably the only team that will ever do that because the conference is moving back to 18 games. There's 364 teams in the country. 362 of them want to be Houston. One is Houston, one is Florida. The other 362 want to be Houston. So I'm happy with the season. I'm proud of the way that they fight and proud of the way that they play. I've always been proud of the way they play under Kelvin Sampson because they're that, lunch pail, blue collar, bring your hard hat to work kind of program, which I like. I like guys who play hard. That's my favorite types of players, the ones that play hard. So I'm proud of that. Now, obviously, you feel very sad with the way that game went yesterday.
No, you absolutely do, and there's so many different things you can look at. But I think the biggest thing is it's like you almost can say that you got duked, because the same way Duke fans felt when they had a lead and then watched it all crumble before their eyes, it wasn't like you got your doors blown off. It wasn't like you didn't have ample chances to win. So the fact that you were up 12 in the national championship game and had subsequent time after that where you were seemingly in control of the game, that's what makes it so much tougher for me as a fan of the team to look at that without shaking my head going, it was right there. They had that thing and you wanted it so bad for them. That's what makes it tougher. If you got your doors blown off or you just didn't play your best game and you were completely out of it, that's one thing. But to be in control for all but a minute and 3 seconds of that game, that's what makes it even more difficult.
Yeah. It was there. It was right there in your grasp. And look, first and foremost, you tip your cap to Florida. Like, Florida's a really good team, too, obviously. Yes. It does show you how delicate and how thin the margins are on winning a national title because, Houston led for over 30 minutes of that game. You look at Florida's path. They beat UConn by a one-possession game in the second round. They were trailing double figures against Texas Tech late in that game. So it goes to show you the fickleness of the NCAA tournament a bit. But Florida made a couple more plays than Houston did last night. Houston, struggled a little bit down the stretch, turning the basketball over. They're one of the best teams in the country at taking care of the basketball. They average 9 turnovers a game. They are simply one of the best all year long at taking care of the ball. And they turned it over a few too many times in those final 3 minutes. And to me, the biggest storyline, I know a lot of people are talking about the officiating. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm ever a blame the officials or refs or umpires kind of guy. Now, I will, call a fact a fact. If it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, if there's certain plays, we'll talk about it and say they miss it. But I don't subscribe to the refs, umpires, officials change the game or determine the winner. But the shooting yesterday, And I thought they got good looks. You know, I thought Houston got some looks that they would like to get. You know, some of the three-pointers they got. They took 25 threes yesterday. Good chunk of them were good looks. Juwan Roberts got some looks in the paint that he normally knocks down. Good looks. So I thought Houston had good looks, but shot 35% from the floor, 6 of 25 from 3, 24%, and needed to be a little bit better. Didn't have to be much better because it was a two-point game, but you shoot over 35% from the floor, you shoot over 25% from three, you probably win. If the Cougars would have shot to their season average yesterday, and if, look, Florida's defense is very good. They're top 10 in the country. There's a reason that, you know, Houston had a difficult time scoring because Florida's defense is very good. Although the looks were there, if they shot anywhere near their season averages, they probably win the game by double figures.
Yeah, there's little things. I think the first thing, kind of just interjecting some of the things you said, but the one thing that bothered me the most right off the top was Todd Golden. The fact that you had the mutual respect between Cryer and Sampson. You had Sampson, who goes out of his way before he says anything about his own squad, to say, great job by that team. That's a hell of a program. That's a hell of a coach. That's whatever. And you just had this over-the-top, brash coach saying, we do have the best backcourt in the country. Matter of fact, we have the best front court too. And now we're this. And it was like, bro, at a certain point, just tip your cap. That was a hell of a game. That was an undecided, up in the air, back and forth, really fun game to watch if you had no vested interest on either side, let alone if you did. But that kind of chapped my ass a little bit, because the same way he was parading back and forth, berating the officials, the same reason why I don't like Hurley at UConn a whole lot is because he just rode them and rode them and rode them. And then the minute that the bench finally got a tee, you can go back and look at it, but in the next 3 minutes, there was a barrage of fouls called that they weren't calling. And so to your point on the officials, the one thing that bothered me is, you know this as well as I do in all the games that we've seen and called and been around. The teams, the coaches, the players, everybody involved, the first 5 minutes of the game, you want to see how the officials are going to call the game so that you know how to react accordingly. Are they going to call it tight? Are they going to let them play? You only call four fouls in the entire first half. Now, the Rockets game the other night as an example. If you get a Draymond Green, Şengün, and Brooks situation and the referees start to fear that you're losing control of the game, you might change on the fly for something like that. But when there was nothing that dictated that that game had to be called any differently, the entire first half set the tone for both teams. They're going to let us play. And then all of a sudden in the second half, they called a completely different game. And from the coaches to the players, that's the worst thing you can possibly have happen for both teams, because now you just don't know what you were able to do in the first half. You might not be able to. Are they going to call this? Are they going to call that? And that's what bothered me the most from an officiating standpoint. I'm not going to go back and say, oh, they missed that one, or they should have got that one or this one, because there's always going to be those plays on both sides. I just didn't like the fact that it was literally a tale of two different halves.
I didn't like the technical on Florida. And it wasn't because, like, oh, they should have let it go or anything, although maybe they should have. You know, it's a highly contested game. The stakes are at the highest of the sport. Their assistant came to the top step, or he came onto the floor yelling at the officials. Was it worthy of a technical? Sure. Like, I mean, these referees do good jobs. If they felt it was worthy, it was probably worthy. Is it better to go over there, maybe give a talking to, not tee them up? But the tee, irrelevant to my point. I've seen so many times in college basketball when a technical is called that it completely changes the way the game is officiated. Because I agree with what you're saying. You know, first half was officiated differently than second half. Let them play in the first half, maybe not so much in the second. Some would say it was skewed. I'm not going to say that. But after the technical, I think, was the line of demarcation. I think that was the line of demarcation more than it was first half, second half. I think it was after that tee. And you saw it in the Texas Tech game when Houston lost at home in overtime against the Red Raiders, their only conference loss this year. Whenever JT Toppin got ejected and McCaslin got ejected, even though it was close, even though it was early in the game, that game was immediately called super tight. Super tight. I felt the same way. Yeah, as soon as they called that tee, I was like, oh, man, this there's a good chance this is going to impact the way that this game's officiated. In fact, I said in the broadcast, I mean, you could go back and pull it up. Whenever that technical was called, I'm like, yeah, they're going to call everything now. And they did. And I didn't like that. I don't think it influenced the outcome of the game. but I didn't like the technical being called because of the ramifications of how the game was going to be officiated from that point forward.
Yeah, and maybe you're right. Maybe, you know, in retrospect, looking back at it, I was looking for, was there altercations? Was there a lot of chippiness? But maybe that technical was where they felt like they've got to get a firm grasp on this game. But in that situation, with everything on the line, with you basically laying it out there that we're going to let you play tonight, to suddenly change it that drastically, I thought it literally affected both teams. It obviously affects Houston more because that's their calling card of their physicality and their ability to, you know, to play strong and physical on all aspects of the game. And I just, you know, we were watching the game, and I said to Lisa, right after the technical, I said, oh, they know that right now that they've let them play. I said, they're hitting, there might be a discrepancy in the fouls too, because they're just going to keep pounding U of H on ticky-tack stuff. And for that 2 to 3 minute span, there was like five calls that were just not being called in the first half.
Yeah. I mean, there was a stat out there that, like, I can't remember it off the top of my head, but I think the next 11 fouls after that technical, like 10 were on Houston. Somebody showed like the play-by-play of like all the fouls that were called on Houston. But look, you know, that's something that you have to adjust to. Florida committed 10 fouls last night. Houston committed 19. Florida shot 21 free throws. Houston shot 14. Not to say that, you know, there was anything fishy with that, but my biggest thing was when they called that technical foul, I just knew the game was going to be officiated differently, and I didn't love that. Now, Florida's very physical, too. Like, Florida's also a very physical team. Like, you know, we talk about the scoring. We talk about Walter Clayton. Florida's one of the best rebounding teams in the country. In fact, they have the most rebounds of anybody in the country per game. Their rebounding margin's insane. They average more offensive rebounds per game than Houston does. So, like, Florida also has that physicality that Houston does as well. A lot of the Hive wants to get on this. We have a busy show. Sadness with the Rockets, or sadness with the Cougars, rather. Sadness with the Astros. Just an awful day to be a Houston sports fan, huh? 713-780-ESPN. We'll get to all of it. We'll talk about the Astros a little bit later. Talk about the Rockets in the playoffs. We can start looking ahead a little bit when it comes to the Rockets. Mel Kiper, latest mock, so Killer Bee's doing what they do. We're going to make mock drafts great again a little bit later. But a jam-packed show, a sad show for me. 713-780-3776. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. Brian at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Beasts on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, hey, look, the clock is ticking. We know that the deadline to get your property taxes protested is May the 15th. I know that tax day is April the 15th, but you have that extra month, but you need to take advantage of it if you're thinking about or have never protested your property taxes. But I'm here to tell you it's the thing to do, because if you do, there's a really good chance that you're going to win. When you win, you're going to save money, and you don't mind paying someone to do the dirty work for you, because it's really a pain if you have to go into the courts and you have to present your case and you have to get all the documentation and everything needed. Why not hire someone to do it for you? And why not hire someone to do it for you that's really experienced, like, say, 60 combined years of experience, that also only has you pay them if you win? If you lose, there's nothing more to do and nothing for you to pay for. If you win, you can pay them based on the fact that you are going to get a victory and save money, so you can have the money there to pay them as part of what you are going to save. It's fantastic. The people I'm talking about, they're Century Tax Consultants. They're the best in the business, and they're going to help you win big. Whether it's residential, commercial, industrial, or business properties, all those property taxes can be fought, and all of them are there waiting for someone like Century Tax Consultants to help you save money with. No savings, no charge. That is their mantra. All you got to do is go to CPROtax.com. That's CPROtax.com and sign up today. They're going to do the work for you. They're going to make the presentation. And if they save you money, you pay them. If they don't, you won't. It's that simple. Check them out today, CPROtax.com. Tax consultants are there to do some work, but the Century Property Tax Consultants are there to do it all for you. Don't pay more on taxes than you need to. CPROtax.com.
ESPN 97.5.
You've
found the killer bees. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. I usually love doing this show. More days. More often than not, I love doing the show. 98% of the time. Today's not one of those days. I really don't want to be here. Sorry. I know. You're supposed to be excited. You're supposed to be happy. You're supposed to be all these things. Don't let the listener know you're having a bad day. All that stuff. That's all fake. That's all fake stuff. I'm sad. I'm a sad man. In fact, I'm so sad, I booked a session with my therapist on Thursday. That's how sad I am. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Mr. Brostash on the Twitch. I do think the referees got way more tighter in the second half. AV, what do you think the Cougs lineup looks like next season? I don't know. Like, this day and age with transfer portal and NBA draft, I have no idea. But, you know, I don't really worry about that stuff because Kelvin Sampson's teams are always going to be good. And like, this recruiting class is very good. He'll be, you know, he'll get a guy or two in the portal. Already have one committed from Sam Houston. I trust Kelvin Sampson to always have a good team on the floor. So I really don't worry about that stuff. Now, when a guy commits, like, I'll look into him. I'll read up on his story. I'll prep up on that sort of thing. I have no idea, AV. I'm not trying to be, you know, sarcastic here or smart aleck. I really don't know. But I do know they're going to be very good. In fact, there's a lot of preseason polls that came out today, and like five of the publications have Houston as their preseason number one.
I saw that, and I think that, you know, what was his recruiting class, like top three or top five?
It's second, right? As of now, it's second.
There you go. Top three in the nation. And the interesting things to me, and I know, you know, you're so close to it, and I, for obvious reasons, you just, there's certain things I don't know that you feel comfortable talking about. But I just look at it, and I go, look, Uzan was a guy that, you know, that Kelvin Ham picked, and he turned out really good. He played really well, you know, all the way up to like the quarters where you thought that he might get some draft run where he might consider it. Mm-hmm. Fell off enough to where he could come back, but you also got a five-star coming in that was the Gatorade Player of the Year in the entire United States. That's a point guard or a ball handler, so you're interested to see how that works out. But, you know, even a Sharp, I hope Sharp is good. I hope he realizes this isn't on his shoulders and all on his shoulders like people are trying to point it out to be. But I hope he comes back because I think he'd be a great piece to have come back from a veteran stabilizing force that's been there, that's a great shooter. I'd love to see him come back. Arsenault's an interesting story. Those are the kind of guys that I'm watching. And Tugler, because Tugler, as you and I have talked about, there's NBA teams salivating over a guy that's athletic, that's got that wingspan, that's raw, that could still be developed more offensively, that has value. But at the same time, we know what kind of value he brought as the defensive player of the year in the conference this year. So those are the ones that I'm interested in because I know the recruiting, like you said, Kelvin's going to get guys to come here, both from the portal and recruits. And now they're on the map even more as a go-to destination in this country for college basketball. It's just, I'm curious for the guys that have already been here, who's coming back?
Yeah. The Sampson kind of alluded in his media during the Final Four that Tugler will be back. Now, this could change on you know, snap of a finger, but he did kind of hint towards that direction. Uzan's going to have a decision. Like, Uzan's, I saw a mock draft today that had him in the top 40. So, like, he'll have a decision to make. But Houston has a plan. And Houston already knows what's going to happen. Like, they know what's happening. Mm-hmm. They know if those guys are leaving or not. They have guys that are mapped out to be on this roster. I'm not privy to that information. I don't like to know, quite frankly. I hear some things around, you know, the dinner table and stuff like that, but I keep my ears shut, and if I do hear something, I don't talk about it.
Right.
But they have things on the way. They're going to be really good. Don't worry about it. They'll be fine. But I'm not trying to be a smart aleck, Alex. I really don't know what that starting five is going to look like other than it's going to be good. This is my mood today. I'm channeling my inner Mike Tyson.
Man, what?
Yeah, that's how I feel. So let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN. Alex, you're in the Hive. What's up, Alex?
Hey, guys. Love your show. Appreciate everything. Just two quick questions. Do you see Coach Sampson finishing his career out at U of H, or do you think he gets poached somewhere else? And the other thing I wanted to ask is I remember reading an article where Coach Sampson said, you know, it'd be nice to have a private jet for recruiting. You know, Texas has deep pockets. Florida obviously has deep pockets. U of H doesn't seem to have that big donor group to help shore up athletics, not just basketball, but football as well. Any comments on that? And then the other thing I wanted to quickly ask was, this upcoming NFL draft, it seems like there's a lot of depth, a lot of players out there on defense and offense that may not be Pro Bowlers, but solid players. What do you think about the Texans just shoring up depth and getting the best player available instead of just trying to address the offensive line this draft? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it, Alex. A lot to digest there. I think, and Jeremy, again, you just kind of alluded to it, but from what I would, you know, from what we know and what I know personally, I believe that Kelvin Sampson is taking, he's alluded to, like you said, in postgame and everything and along the way that he's coming back. I think he's extremely excited and happy with what's going on. His son is coach in waiting. So, and we know that Lauren's involved, his daughter, as I think director of basketball operations. It's a family affair. I think that he's going to be here for a while. When he does decide to step down, his son is waiting, Kelvin, to take over for Kelvin. I don't expect him going anywhere for the next couple of years. And I think that right now, for all the blood, sweat, and tears he's put into this program to get it in the right direction and now keep taking it to another level, I think I think this fuels him last night, too, that he wants to see this thing through and get that kind of one missing piece on his Hall of Fame resume.
He's been quoted as saying, don't mess with Happy, and this will be his final job. So I'm not worried about him getting poached. We know how college athletics are these days, but those are things that he said. I take him for his word. I believe him whenever he says that, 100%. So I'm not really worried about the poaching thing. As far as the Texans, I'm always best player available, especially when you're picking in the 20s. So I'm with you on that, Alex. Like, if all the offensive linemen you like are gone before you pick and you don't have the ability to trade up, take the best player available. If it's receiver, great. So, yeah, I'm with you on that, Alex, that the Texans should draft best player available. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Texter says the officials robbed us on the goaltending. I thought it was goaltending live. It was the first half, so like it was pretty early in the game. I thought it was goaltending live. Watching the replay of it, I am shocked that call was not made.
Oh, no question.
Shocked. Because the officials, here's, I don't know how many people know this. I assume a decent amount know this rule. In college basketball, for goaltending to be reviewed, it has to be called on the floor. If it is not called on the floor, it is no longer a reviewable play. So it has to be called in the run of play. And these officials are taught to overcall goaltending so they have the ability to go to the monitor to get confirmation, to help them with their call, to, you know, to err on the side of caution, for a lack of a better way of putting that. I've seen some egregious non-goaltendings called so they can have the ability to go to the monitor. Mm-hmm. I am stunned that call was not made so they could have the ability to go to the monitor. That was a missed call in the first half. Probably doesn't swing the game. Saying it influenced the outcome, but that was 100% a missed call.
Now, I'm going to add, I agree with everything you said, and I'll add something to that, too, and that the other thing that the officials do is, in situations like that, they're not afraid when everybody's, oh, that was a late call. But when the late call, when it's appropriate, is how the players react, because the players are right there on top of the goal. And when you saw both teams kind of look over their shoulder and stop, and you were seeing the Cougs were so adamant, that's where just to side to err on the side of caution, you blow the whistle, even if it's a little late, you go, no, we got to look at that one. And then you go back and the main objective is to get the call right. And you saw both teams do that. You saw Roberts and other guys that were right on the rim going, wait. You still have enough time in the speed of the game to still blow that whistle, make that call, and then just get it right. And no one's going to be on your ass if they were like, oh, well, it took a little longer. The fact that everybody reacted that way and they just kind of swept it under the rug, and then it was a swing because I think Florida got a three right after that.
Transition three.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, that's one where, yeah, obviously with the score of the game at the end of the game, people are saying that could have decided the game. I'm not doing that either. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that whole momentum swing right there was kind of done by the fact that you didn't blow the whistle on one where you could have at least, under the way the letter of the law is, reviewed it to get it right.
Yeah, you had to call it on the floor to review it, but I'm stunned that they didn't do it. It was a 5-point swing. And look, maybe they call it goaltending, the bucket counts, and Florida gets a three anyways. So like maybe it wouldn't have been a 5-point swing, but a potential 5-point swing. Mm-hmm. It certainly took 2 points away from you. Texture, heartbreaker of the calls, non-calls was the blatant basket interference that was missed. I said I hope that doesn't bite us. Lo and behold, it did. Texter 409 Josh, I didn't watch a ton of Cougar basketball this season. Any ideas why Cryer seemed to be off the ball some towards the end and why Wilson wasn't in the game instead of Uzan? Well, Uzan's a starting point guard. Like the Uzan's going to be in the game ahead of Malik Wilson. That's just the way it is. Uzan's a better player than Malik. No offense to Malik. He's great in his role, but he's not Milos Uzan. Wilson seemed to be in every offensive highlight after the game and seemed to be playing better. I thought he took some bad shots in the first half. Are those two things just normal end-of-game operations? Yeah, it's normal. Like, Wilson's usually on the bench because he is a bench player. Mm-hmm. He's really good in his role. X-factor, does all the little things. When the Cougars go small, oftentimes they'll use him as a small four. They like to use Arsenault in that way as well. But, like, Wilson was in the game late against Duke, small ball four. But he's a bench guy. Like, and he's not going to play over Uzan. Uzan's your best ball handler. Like, so I don't see why Wilson would have been on the floor there.
I think that from the standpoint of someone that has driven me nuts lately, except for the Tennessee game and even then, but Arsenault drove me crazy last night too because he came in and he didn't even have like the shine of a sweat going yet, and he felt like his mission was when he touched it, he was going to shoot it or try and drive and score it. And there's so many ways that that guy can affect the game positively that would bother me. As for a call that I think I was curious your angle on it, because from a TV perspective, I don't think they focused enough on it. The one that I was really adamant about was Aberdeen late in the game where Clayton Jr. kind of gets caught in the air and throws it up the floor forward. Mm-hmm. And Aberdeen, later people were saying he stepped out. Before he stepped out, when he caught it and he was going full speed, he was trying to stop. I rewound it to watch it again. There is no doubt in my mind he dragged his pivot foot and slid across the floor before he even got fouled and or stepped out of bounds, and they didn't even – I don't think they even batted an eye at it.
Yeah, I didn't think live that either. I saw some people also saying that Clayton, before he passed it up the floor to Aberdeen, shuffled his feet, which on replay you do see a little shuffle, but I didn't see it live. Like, that's one I'm not going to lose sleep over. The Aberdeen one as well, because, like, I forget who fouled him. Like, he's getting there right around the time that he might have shuffled his feet or dragged his foot. So those two I don't really mind, but I did see that come up on both ends of that play. Clayton, who sent the pass up the floor to Aberdeen, and then Aberdeen who caught it, and I didn't see the stepped out thing. I'll have to go back and watch that.
Yeah, it was after the contact, so I think that they would have said the foul occurred before, but as he was sliding, and then whenever they blew the whistle, his front foot slid right over the sideline.
Yeah, interesting. I'm going to go back and watch where his feet are on the sideline. I did see some people complaining that either Clayton or Aberdeen traveled. I thought both of them were bang-bang, and in that moment, like, I could see it going either way type of deal. 713-780-ESPN, the Hive wants to talk about the national championship game from yesterday. Chris is on the HRMP listener line. We'll get to him on the other side. Texters as well, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Adrian, there was a play in the second half for Florida's big scored, and right after he made the bucket, I think it was the first half actually, right after he made the bucket, he ran into Tugler and the rest blew the whistle since Tugler was down on the ground. If I'm not mistaken, they didn't even rule that a foul on Florida. Should that have been called a foul or not? I thought it was a no call. I mean, the guy made it and he was running up the floor and they just ran into each other.
Yeah, it was first half. I thought the only way that it looked egregious was when they really, really slow it down. There were people saying, well, he dropped the shoulder. I mean, he wasn't expecting Tugler to be there. And he kind of reacted, and you kind of protect yourself, and you kind of go down a little bit. But I'm with you. That's a play on.
Yeah, play on. Adrian, filling for you today, J-Bone. Keep that chin up and always go Cougs. Yeah, I'm proud of Houston. Like, I know that we're I'm griping about having my heart broken last night, but I'm very proud of what they did. I'm very proud of the season that they had. 362 teams want to be Houston today. Mm-hmm. Mentioning all the questionable calls that went in favor of Florida, what about the other way around? I'm here for it. What other calls that happened against Florida do you think were unfavorable? Well, we'll listen to them. We'll give you an honest opinion. Yeah. Just like that Tugler big man collision, I thought it was a good no call.
I'm curious because for me, it was Florida's got three serviceable bigs, and U of H obviously does as well. But the fact that you were allowing them to create verticality in the first half and you were allowing them to decide the game until you didn't and they weren't, and then you got the complete polar opposite is what threw me off. I'm not trying to say, there weren't calls that went against both teams. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a Houston radio show, and people are hell-bent focused on the calls that didn't go Houston's way. But I also think that the biggest frustration, I will go back to what I said to start the show, in any level of basketball, you just want to know how the officials are going to call the game. They set the tone in the first half with four fouls called, and then they just completely reversed course in the second half, and I think that's the most difficult game to coach and for the players to play in any basketball game.
And I want to be very clear. Florida won that game yesterday. Mm-hmm. Florida's very good. Tipping the cap at Florida. We're just dissecting the intricacies of the game, not taking away what Florida did at all. They are a deserving, worthy national champion, and they won that game yesterday. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chris, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's going on, Chris?
Yeah, good afternoon, Jeremy, Joel. Jeremy, it's good to hear you on the radio today. I know it's not easy to talk about the game. What a season they had. You're an alumni and also the voice of the Cougars, so you got a double whammy. So I know the Hive is glad to hear that your aspects on the game today. You didn't take a day off. Some others might have taken a day off today, but not Jeremy. The offense this year was a step up, in my opinion. Three guys shooting the three ball over 40%, I think, is what really catapulted them to the final game this year. And I just hope that the offense keeps improving. I mean, their defense has always been good, but, their offense, their shooting was really, really good this year. And I think that was the big difference. And it was not a failure of a season. They made it to the final game. Like you said, Florida was the better team. But in my opinion, guys, I know y'all won't say it, but I'll say it. The Hive knows it. The real reason why the Cougs lost last night, it wasn't the refs. It wasn't Florida. It was because Ted Cruz was at the game. Can you stop him from going to the games, guys? Come on, Jeremy. Keep him from going into the game.
Yeah, Jeremy.
That's why we lost. Bye.
You got that pull?
The stats on that are nuts. Like, I usually, like, poo-poo on that stuff. Like, okay, like, this has nothing to do with – there's zero correlation. It's all coincidence. But then you pull the numbers, and it's like, man. It's like –
it's like 1-7. I'm wondering, interested what the one win was. I think it's like 1-7 or more.
It's nuts. Like, it's so many times that it's like, it can't be a coincidence anymore. It can't be an accident. I still don't give it any credence, but the numbers are the numbers on it.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of numbers, the NCAA just sent out the amount of viewers that last night's championship game had. They averaged 18.1 million viewers, which is up 22%. Most watched game, national championship game, since 2019.
That's awesome.
So really good numbers. Peaked at 21 million viewers, which is always good, right? You always want the eyes on you. Mm-hmm. It's good for,
And I think that indirectly, the other thing that, again, that is kind of like a free marketing calling card for the program is, if you want sustainability and you've got that many eyeballs on the program and you've got Kelvin Sampson front and center and a U of H team that's right there in it till the bitter end playing basketball the way it's supposed to be played, there's going to be a ton of kids around the country that want to play for Kelvin Sampson and the U of H Cougars. That, I think, is kind of on a sidebar. That's a big deal.
Is BMAC allowed to talk today? Maybe at 5. I have to leave early. That's cool with you guys, right? I forgot to tell y'all. Ocho Emmanuel Sharp's going to take this to his grave. This is his scarlet letter. He knew it in the moment. To make matters worse, the moment will be a permanent fixture in the One Shining Moment montage and the March Madness highlights and lowlights. Tough. I hate it for him because he was so good all year long. Big 12 tournament, most outstanding player, was the Midwest region, most outstanding player. I think what gets – look, he didn't have a good shooting night. Like that is the brutal, honest – like no one had a good shooting
right.
night. Sharp was 3 for 11. Crier, who had your best offensive game, was 6 for 18. Jawan had some good looks, was 3 for 13. Uzan was 2 for 9. So no one shot it well. And I thought there were looks there. No one shot it well. But that's the brutal honesty of the situation. What gets lost last night because of Sharp shooting struggles and then that final turnover was that his defense against Walter Clayton was immaculate, mm-hmm. was sensational, was dynamite. He was so good on the defensive end. And him defensively kept Houston in that game. Like, Walter Clayton was scoreless at the half. Scoreless because of the defense Emmanuel Sharp was playing. But because he had a bad offensive night in that final play, like it's going to be a bad moment in his career. In a game when on one side of the floor, he was incredible.
Yeah, and I was curious how they were going to defend Walter Clayton Jr. The fact that Sharp's a bigger body, too, and he was able to hang with him and fight through screens with him and like you said, hold him scoreless in the first half. And I kept just watching him going, the thing that scared me the most was, like, the two free throws. But then I kind of turned to Lisa at a certain point right before he got the three-point play, and I'm like, what you don't want right now is you've done a great job on him. You just don't want him to wake up with, like, one and one, and he got the three-point play. And I'm like, see, that scares me because now he could wake up. He made a three subsequently after that. He got going a little bit. But, you know, I heard people saying, oh, he's the MVP of the game. No, he was the most outstanding player of the tournament. But the reason why he wasn't the MVP of that game was because of Emmanuel Sharp. And it's unfair to put the fact that, yeah, they didn't get shots off on their final two possessions and he had the ball in his hands. But the beauty of when we talk about culture with this program is that his own teammates were not going to let that happen. They were not going to let anybody try and bury Emmanuel and say this was on him. And the fact that they were there to come to his defense to basically say, hey, there's a million plays in the game where you make a mistake here or there that could cost you. We're not putting that on him. That speaks volumes about the fact that it's not just, you know, coach speak on culture. These guys, we're not going to let that happen. I love that.
Texter says he should have took the turnover instead of just letting the clock run out. I mean, hindsight 2020, that would have been the better outcome. But it's very tough to do in the split second that you're in the air. I saw a lot of outrageous opinions on that play. Look, it wasn't executed. Houston turned it over, didn't get a shot up. Certainly not the way that you want it to happen there on that final possession. But it's my position's weird because, like, I see behind the scenes of, like, what teams do to prepare. And then, like, on, you know, sports talk, radio host or whatever, it's like all these, oh, you got to get the ball to this guy on this specific play. Like, and you really have no idea what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw some hot takes after the Duke game, which was like, oh, the Cougars didn't play their style of basketball until the last 10 minutes of the game. What? Like, you don't think they were playing their style of basketball in the first 30 minutes, just Duke executed better, and then they executed better in the final 10 minutes? So your definition of style of plays, the execution, is the result? That's not how it goes. That's not the way that it works. That specific play was supposed to – you have multiple options, which, again, like, these offenses are sophisticated. We really don't consider that in sport, you know, sports talk radio. Like, we talk about this with the Rockets. Well, they got to have a closer. Every single offensive possession has three different actions to get three different looks. Like, and it depends on how the defense comes out and attacks it and does all of these things. That play was to – Crier talked about it after the game. Sampson talked about it after the game. Stagger screen, get the ball to Crier on the right wing. If he has an opportunity, attack it. If not, you have Sharp that's running through that elevator screen at the top of the key. Either catch and shoot it if you have a look. If the guy has to close out quickly, maybe a ball fake, maybe a drive, create numbers. What I think happened on that play, because you go back and watch it, Clayton had his feet in the sand. Mm-hmm. Clayton was late. Clayton was falling asleep a bit, and I think Sharp felt that. So Sharp feeling that Clayton was late and he had separation, he felt that he had a good look to catch and shoot, had a good opportunity to knock down a go-ahead bucket. Clayton's closeout was incredible.
It was.
So Sharp, knowing that he had space, then all of a sudden is going to rise and fire for the shot. Oh, my goodness, Clayton's in my face. I cannot believe he recovered. So he got handcuffed. He got handcuffed and turned it over. But that's what they were trying to do. Cryer's your first option. And he had the ball. You can't get it to him with the option, the second. I've seen him work on this play tons of times. Second option, Sharp through the elevator screen. If you have space, shoot it. If you don't, try to drive, ball fake, create, whatever. And Sharp felt he had separation, and he did. Like, go back and watch the play. He had separation. But Clayton's closeout was elite, elite, and it won him the game.
There's no doubt. I agree with what you said. There's no doubt in my mind, just from you have a feeling. You have a feeling when you're running to get to the ball at the top of the screen that you created some space between the defender and yourself. And I think that Sharp felt like, oh, I caught him. I got enough time to get this thing off. And when he caught it, there was no doubt he thought he had time to turn and to get it off. And then the element of surprise, like you said, the closeout and the recovery from Clayton Jr. was so quick, he didn't expect it, and he was already well into his shot to where he was like, oh, bleep, now what? Mm-hmm. And I saw people say, oh, he should have thrown it back to Cryer. At that moment,
no chance.
There is absolutely no way, and if you put yourself in that situation to say you could react like that, you're lying. You're full of it.
That's the hot takey stuff that I find funny. Like, okay, like, yeah, that'd be nice. But the Cryer wasn't even an option. Like, the only options you had there really was to, like, maybe try to force a pass to Francis, which probably less than a coin flip chance it even gets to him with the way that he was defended. Maybe you could throw it off Clayton's body and hope for a good bounce. But, again, you're hoping for a good bounce. Like, he was handcuffed. And the underrated aspect of that play was the closeout by Walter Clayton.
No doubt.
And to me, that's not getting enough love. Like, Walter Clayton, 11 points in the second half, didn't have a good shooting night, 3 for 10, 1 for 7 from 3, thanks to Emmanuel Sharp's defense. His closeout on that specific play is what led to that turnover. He's the one that should be getting the credit as opposed to blame for anybody else.
As much as he got caught with his pants down initially to create the opportunity for Sharp to come up and get that ball, his recovery time was like a defensive back. He recovered. He recovered so quickly that it literally startled Sharp, who thought he had time. And then the rest is history. You're in no man's land at that point. The only other thing I said, I heard people say, you can hang on to it and hope he runs into you. Well, yeah, but at the same time, you know, that's a bang-bang play where a guy running out, closing out on you, he's just trying to get where the ball is. But you still have enough space where he's probably not going to, like, Mack truck you. And there was little time on the clock. So it's easy as a Monday morning quarterback to tell you, oh, he should have done this, should have done that. That's a bang-bang play where he didn't have time to react like everybody thinks he did.
Yeah, and he already left his feet.
Yep.
Like, yeah, I mean, once you leave your feet, I mean, it's hard to get the collision there. Maybe the ball fake step into him or ball fake drive. But, again, I think he was handcuffed. I thought he had separation. He thought he had separation. And Clayton with an elite closeout. 713-780-ESPN. More on the Hive texting in. Have some thoughts on this Houston-Florida National Championship game. Was a thriller. Was an exciting game. YouTube Keith, I think, sums it up pretty well. Heavyweight fight between Florida and Houston. It was that. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, we were out there last Friday. You need to get out there if you're looking to buy a house with a country lifestyle that's still close enough to the city limits of Houston, and that's River Ranch Dayton. RiverRanchDayton.com is where you need to go so you can see the pictures of this place if you didn't see the pictures that we posted last Friday. They have their own lagoon. It's amazing. It's crystal blue water. It's white sandy beaches. It's right there, and it's all included as part of your property for a house in a new community in Dayton, Texas. I say Dayton, Texas because you're close enough to Houston that you can commute, but you're also far enough away that once you get there, you are completely separated from the hustle and bustle of the lifestyle of a big city like Houston. It's fantastic. The houses are affordable from the 200s to the 500s, and they're from the top builders in the entire city and the nation, Empire Communities, as D.R. Horton, Hovnanian. You're going to love these houses. You're going to get a three-car garage, a really spacious house, a nice-sized yard, and then you're going to have all the extra amenities that come with it, a dog park, a workout facility. The lagoon itself is absolutely fantastic, and pickleball courts as well. Everything right there at your fingertips so you never have to leave and you never have to indulge in the city life when you get away from work. Check them out today. Go to RiverRanchDayton.com. Call my friend Michael Luster, who's the best realtor in the business. 870-754-9164. He'll help you if you got to get out of a lease, if you're interested in the house and with financing options. Michael Luster's at 870-754-9164 or RiverRanchDayton.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ocho says, wife asked me if this loss hurts more than 83. He says, not even close, but it does hurt. See, for me, this one hurts more. I wasn't alive in 83. You know, my hurt for the 83 game is based on story and watching the game back. It wasn't my feeling there. So I think it depends on who you ask. This is Houston sports. Like, this is not just University of Houston. Like, the entire landscape of Houston sports, like Oilers and – you know, the Rockets eventually won two, the Astros eventually won two, but you've had some heartbreaking moments in the city. You know, we talk about it a lot, like the worst, the most gut-wrenching losses in the history of sports in the city of Houston. This one would be up there for me. Now, you know, I'm obviously a diehard Houston Cougar. There's a lot of our listenership that aren't Cougars, so this wouldn't be their biggest loss. But, yeah, another one for that category, I guess.
I saw Raul from Cobos Q's. Said Houston just Houstoned, and it's just because, like, to your point, the fans are conditioned to have gone through this. I mean, I went through it with the Lillard shot, the Stockton shot. You know, they're in Rockets lore. You can rattle them off. You mentioned the Oilers. I mean, the Astros in 15 and the walk off Blummer home run. It's just, it's unfortunate, but this city's kind of conditioned to kind of deal with this.
I don't know if you ever get conditioned to deal with it. I don't know if dealing with it. I think you like know it's coming and you have like the battered fan syndrome. I don't know if you ever get conditioned to deal with it though, because like it doesn't help the feeling at all.
No, I mean when you're super close to it too, it hurts. It's obviously a different kind of hurt, but I do think that from a fan's perspective, maybe it's a way of dealing with it. It's going to say, oh, we're going to Houston it again. But at the same time, yeah, when it actually kicks you in the gut, it ain't fun, and it's never going to change.
Yeah. Texture, I never saw a better and more perfect defense than Houston. If we would have made them shots, at least half of them, because we were shooting 38% at halftime. Both teams were, if we could at least not been making at least 45. That text all over the place. Still go Cougs. Let's see. A few more texts on this. Don't know why Francis was slow to get to the ball once Sharp lost it. Well, he had his back. I mean, he set a screen. He had his back right to the ball. Like, I mean, and you don't expect the ball to be bouncing around free there. It might be the only time all year where the ball's bouncing around like that.
They're also out of timeouts, right? So if he gets it with minimal time on the clock, what are you going to do with it?
Yeah, you just heave it up,
right?
Do you feel like Houston was getting the ball inside more in the first half than they were in the second? Seemed like Florida's defense tightened up. No, I still thought they got good looks inside. Like, Roberts had some looks inside. So I don't think so.
I thought that was the case. I nitpicky, but I thought that they got a little enamored with just all the dribble handoffs and the big screens up on top, when I thought that at least once or twice, if you got Roberts down on the post, I think he was getting looks where he
shot the second most shots on the team.
I do think that, you know, again, with the final four possessions, I thought one of those could have gone to Roberts. If you want to get nitpicky, but I think he's a good enough to where he could facilitate. They would have collapsed on him. You might have been able to get a really clean look out of that. But again, that's hearsay. You know, that's after the fact.
3 for 13.
Mm-hmm.
What sucks the most is that the shot wasn't taken. Just shoot it. If we miss, so be it. But have to get a shot off. The turnovers in the last couple of minutes, so uncharacteristic of Houston. That was bizarre. It was weird. It wasn't them. But credit Florida's defense for that. Texter, the kid U of H signed from San Antonio, is an absolute monster. The future is bright. He's talking about Kingston Flemings. Very good player. They have a good class coming in. They have Chris Cenac, who is a 5-star. Not that, you know, Houston cares about stars a whole lot. Isaiah Harwell. And then they have the Bryce Jackson from Shadow Creek, who I think a lot of people are overlooking. Texter, people keep saying Florida was the better team, but Houston led the whole game until the last 20-something seconds. Houston ran out of time. Texter, once the bigs got in foul trouble, the offense just went to dribble handoffs at three-point line, no penetration or movement. It's kind of the point that that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I had to wear this for an hour. I think we'll move on now. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. From one heartbreak to another. How about the Astros yesterday blowing a late lead? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. First, a moment on HRP, human resources and payroll. Cougar owned by my colleagues. You know it's in good hands. And business owners, let HRP help you. Whether it's HR compliance, benefits administration, payroll, onboarding, any of those things, one of those things, all of those things, HRP can help you. You're tired of wasting your time in those areas. Well, bring on HRP, have them help you out. You can spend some time on the things you want to spend some time on. There's no boxes with HRP. You're not reading off a menu. Doesn't matter how small the job or how big the job, HRP is going to completely customize a plan for what you and your business need. You have a problem, want to take one thing off your plate, several things off your plate, HRP is going to find a way to help. And they do it in a way that is unique. Technology meets service. They have the best tech. You'll love that. But you'll also love their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You'll never talk to a stranger. You'll be talking to someone who knows you and they know your business needs. Give them a call right now. 281-880-6525. Join forces with HRP. Bring them onto your team. That way they can help you out. Let HRP customize a plan for you. 281-880-6525. Or check them out online at HRP.net. That's HRP.net.
ESPN 97.5.